Hello and welcome to this special broadcast event for International Day of People with a Disability. I'm Nicole Smith. I'm a person with a disability wanting to be a mother one day. If you've tuned in to listen to Women on the Line, we'll be back to regular programming next week. Today we will be talking to two women I am proud to call personal friends. You're listening to 3CR and we have in the studio with me Jack's Jackie Brown, and joining us on the phone, Elvira Tarrant. Hi, ladies. Thanks for joining me to talk about parenting as a person with a disability. Now, if I could start with you, Jax, just a bit of your backstory. You're recently a new parent?
Yeah, I am. I've got a 7.5-month-old daughter with my partner, Anne. And I guess a little bit of our backstory is that as a queer couple, we went through IVF to conceive her. And that, for anyone who's been through that, was a really exhausting emotional and exhausting financial process as well. And the way that industry kind of relates and frames disability as a negative medical problem was actually really challenging for me as someone who is really proud of my body and proud to have a disability and to belong to the disability community, to enter an industry that saw disability as an inherently negative thing was challenging. So especially given that, you know, the choice to try and become a parent is such an emotional one. So yeah, I guess they're the kind of things that inform my thinking about trying to conceive our daughter, but then also thinking politically about how we can kind of make fertility services more affordable and accessible and inclusive for people with disabilities.
Definitely. Elvira, if we could just hear from you now what your story is.
Yeah, definitely. So I've got two little ones, and I've got a little girl, she's two and a bit, and a little boy is nearly one. So I've got my hands full. But initially I did find it quite confronting and still do in some respects. There's a lot of, I guess, perceptions that are really challenging at times. Not to mention the stares and things that you get when they yell out mummy to you and cling to you and things. But also medically, like in the medical profession, I think a lot of doctors, a lot of nurses, a lot of midwives I found quite difficult to deal with at times. These are all things I raised at the time, but I think we've got definitely a long way to go with how they perceive us, people with a disability, becoming parents and becoming good parents at that, and just acknowledging that, like anyone, we can make mistakes and we have, you know, both good and bad things about us as individuals, but I guess the disability is only one part of that. Yep. It doesn't really have to affect child's life negatively.
Mm-hmm. I guess with me, I am desperate to be a parent at some stage in the future. And I guess with me, one of the things that's sort of getting me down or that I'm worried about is that I need support workers myself. So how then am I going to be a parent and care for another little human? So, Elvira, I know that you have support workers. How did you, get over that or justify that in your own mind?
Yeah, I think it's a work in progress. Like, initially, I was quite overwhelmed by it. Initially, I thought, you know, who in their right mind would be willing to help a person with a disability and their child and manage all that and juggle it and yet stand back when they need to. And, you know, so for me it was really important, and we've talked about this often and I've tried to guide you, and I mean for myself I'm still trying to work it out. I haven't, you know, found this magic formula to managing all of that, but I think it's really important to find support workers in any regard that really understands you as a person. And I guess understanding what you want to do with your life, irrespective of whether you want to be a parent or not, but then understanding that next step, look, okay, I want to be a mother, how are you going to help me be a mother? And not just help you don't want them to necessarily mother your child. I never wanted that, and I never do ever want that, because I'm more than capable of doing that. I just need them to understand and have that unspoken understanding sometimes. Sometimes the conversation isn't necessary, but sometimes the person has to really be intuitive and understand where the boundaries are,
yeah.
Because there definitely are boundaries that can be overstepped.
I think there's gendered expectations around it too. Like, I think what's expected of men with disabilities who potentially want to be fathers or who are fathers is a really different level of engagement and kind of engagement to what's expected for women who have disabilities. Because I think we're expected to be able to do everything and be on top of everything. And then if you can't do that, like if you need support to do that, then there is a lot of judgment that comes on you both externally and internally. Like I'm currently on my first NDIS package, and I felt really hard in that package to get parenting supports in that package. So I have had some parenting supports as well. And one of the things that I've found really challenging about that is that while the people have been really lovely, they have stepped in and done stuff for my kid and with my kid that I couldn't do or that I can't do in the same kind of way. And so it's about a negotiation about, okay, so I need you to assist me to get my daughter off the floor on her playmat, onto my lap and strapped into my my little belt thing that I wear around my lap to carry her around the house. But I don't need you to pick her up and play with her and, you know, have a game with her. I just need you to assist me in doing these tasks so that then I can take her and read her a book or do whatever we're doing together. I think often when people are, you know, engaging with your child and you're paying them to do that, they take on a more kind of babysitting type role in their mind, and that's not what you want.
And that's been something that I've definitely found. So, Jax, you're at like 7 months now, and that's when I probably found it the hardest, because my child now with the second one, I found it much easier because I found, I guess, what I need to talk to my carer about, and I've also found a carer that's really understanding. But that was a big issue for me, and with my first child, I felt this overwhelming anxiety that, you know, my child's not going to know who the mother is. My child's not going to be able to identify that, okay, yes, I call this lady mummy, but why isn't she doing X, Y, and Z for me? And I felt that, you know, one day she was just not going to have that connection. And a lot of the time it was about making the carer understand that you are here to support me to be the mother, and you are not the mother, or you are not the person that's meant to, I guess, remove that bond or come in between that bond. And I think it takes a lot of practice, and it takes a lot of understanding from the support worker, even for little things like, you know, choosing what they're going to wear, or even having a conversation and you trying to teach them to say mum, and then them stepping in, even though it's a natural thing to try and engage with the child if they're cute and all that kind of stuff, you need them to understand that, wait a second, if the child's engaging with you, they need to take that little step back. It's a tricky one, but I think there's ways around it. And you kind of got a bit more comfortable with it over time, and you learn to, deal with it a bit better.
For anyone tuning in, you're listening to 3CR. We're doing a special broadcast for International Day of People with a Disability. We'll be back to regular programming, including Women on the Line, next week. And Jax, I just wanted to ask you about a report that you actually brought to my attention that was recently published by Women's Health Victoria. Could you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, so it's actually going to be launched. It's publicly available, and it's called Great Expectations, Experiences of Early Motherhood, and looking at the kind of things that women without disabilities particularly, it's not looking at disability yet experience in terms of, you know, being the birthing person and being the primary carer, and how often there can be really gendered expectations around what that looks like and the role of that woman to be able to, you know, do everything for that child and often be doing things solo and being relatively unsupported and spending, you know, days at home with the young baby, and how often that new space in your life, that new relationship, can be a time of great joy, but also a time of like high stress and sleep deprivation and upheaval. And I think when you add disability into the mix, like we're doing today, you know, that there's extra levels of complexity to it, and there's extra kind of pressures that we come under. I find even now with my daughter, when I'm out in public with her and, you know, my partner stepped away to do something or whatever, and so me and her are just hanging out, I'm really aware that people are watching, you know, and maybe they're watching because they're a bit curious and they haven't seen someone with a disability, you know, interact with a little kid or parent a little kid. But I am aware that, like, you know, like I'm watched or looked at to a higher degree than other parents are when they're in public with their kid. And sometimes, like, that can be really stressful. And so I kind of feel like I've always got to be on top of my game. I've always got to be, you know, making sure she's all right and she's not going to cry and blah, blah, blah. Because there's this fear that, you know, if my child loses it, like, and some stranger steps in, are they going to read me as her parent? What does that mean? So I think, yeah, there's a lot of different questions that disability brings up when we think about parenting. That organisations, you know, that people aren't even starting to think about or research or have areas of interest in it, that we're living it, and we need to start having more of these conversations.
Have you found, this is a question that's open to both of you, have you found that your child or your children have adapted to you being in a wheelchair or having a physical disability? I know, Elvira, I've seen your daughter kind of push a book further onto your lap so that you can reach it. Have you found that they're intuitive in what you can and can't do?
Yeah,
first, your kids are older, so you have more to say.
I found with my oldest, she's really aware, so she knows everything from, you know, where I can only use my right hand, for instance, and she'll position my phone or whatever it is that she needs at a level that I can reach, or even position the phone so I can reach the button. If I'm putting moisturiser on her face, she'll kneel down or position herself so that I can reach her cheek to rub it in, or even comfort her if she's hit herself. She knows that my right hand works, or she knows if she wants to touch my left hand, she'll have to turn off my wheelchair first. And my little son now, he's nearly one, and he's a little bit more rough around the edges. And he knows now that he has to come to me, and if I'm on the bed, he'll have to jump up and come to me, that I can't just pick him up. So they're really intuitive, and I think they understand a great deal more than adults sometimes. And they just naturally do it, and they adapt, and it's beautiful, really. It's really touching.
Jax?
I mean, I think with our daughter, she's only 7.5 months, so she's getting to the point now where she's real, like, she's more engaging with toys and the world and stuff. So she's just started, you know, like, trying to pull herself up on my chair and, like, play with my wheels and get under my chair and, like, hide out under there and hang out and, like, exploring it as though it's, like, this interesting thing. I think previously she just gone, oh, yeah, whatever, that's just a thing. Where now she's starting to actually engage with it. I'm kind of really interested to see, the kind of ways that she'll learn to interact with my chair and my body. Like, I as I said, I can't pick her up from the floor, and so I'm interested to see, as she's able to stand up more and stuff, how we can work together for me to be able to get her up off the floor onto my lap, those kind of things. But yeah, I think that she's just starting to kind of work it out, which is really beautiful and interesting too.
Yeah. I know that both of you have kind of mentioned in passing that when you've been out in public, you've been sort of people have looked at you and stared and sort of been confused when you're the mother or when you're the parent. I just wondered how that sort of manifested itself when you were going through either the hospital or when you were going through the IVF process, whether you found that professionals were, that they showed some sort of subtle discrimination as well?
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, I didn't carry our daughter, my partner did. So I am interested in trying to carry our next child. And so I'm interested to see how, you know, being potentially pregnant with a baby and all that will impact further. But yeah, like for us, we personally chose not to undergo any disability testing. That was our personal choice. We didn't want to do that. And I remember when we told the IVF clinic, you know, that this was, we were choosing not to go down that path. The nurse leaned across the table and put her hand on my partner's hand and said, you know, this is your choice though. As though I wasn't even there in that moment, and as though we hadn't had discussions in our relationship about whether or not we felt comfortable testing or not testing. It was kind of as though I was pushing my agenda onto my partner or something, and of course she'd want to and not get rid of disability because disability is a terrible thing. So we had, you know, situations like that. We were really clear in our birth plan and in our stay at the hospital when our daughter was born that I was her other parent and that was who I was. But I feel like a lot of the time in our relationship, people read me as Anne's friend or sister, and they don't necessarily read me as her partner. And because I'm not femme presenting at all, I think I get read as, you know, not being my daughter's parent either, like that I must just be some kind of friend who's rocked up and is playing with her. So that's always frustrating.
Yeah, I can imagine. Elvira?
Yeah, I've had very similar experiences to Jack. In public, yeah, definitely. And that feeling, that overwhelming feeling of, oh, please don't, like, you know, chuck a wobbly in front of anybody because they're going to stare at you as if you're a bad mother or as if, you're not doing the right thing or what are you doing with this child? Whose child is it? And then in the hospital system, it's definitely, we face the same thing in regards to testing. We didn't want to test for Down syndrome and all that kind of stuff because we didn't want to abort and there's no reason to test. There's no reason we needed to know that. And if we did have a child with any disability, we would have welcomed it with open arms. And for us, I think it extended also to shame. So a lot of the time people just presume that because I had a disability that my husband had a disability or that he would have. So when I would talk about him and then he'd come because he was at work or whatnot during my stay or during appointments, when they'd meet him, it'd be that, oh, so you're a husband, oh, wow. Like you can just see it all over their face. And it also, I also had a moment which I'll never forget. It was with my first child and I was a few days later and she was a premier baby, so she was in the nursery. And I had a team of doctors, nurses and all sorts of people, like patient consultants, that would just come in because I was quite curious. And at the time I wasn't really aware that I could just tell them not to come in. I kind of allowed it myself. Because I thought, okay, they can learn and they're curious and that's fine. But it started to get quite intrusive and it started to take away from my experience as a mother with breastfeeding, with just connecting with my child because I could only have her for a few hours because she had temperature control issues. But she had to be in an incubator in the nursery. And then what I now see upon reflection is that I had a lot of judgment in the way I breastfed or in the way I did anything really. And it really changed the way I managed the second pregnancy and everything from the birth till after till going home. I was very much more in control and very aware that I had all these people judging me and really just not believing that I can be a good mum. I had one midwife that was a part of the WIN clinic, which is a women with individual support needs, and she was meant to be helping me during my stay at the hospital, and she blatantly told me that I need more than one carer because I need someone to care for me and care for my child when I get home, and that my mother should be taking time off to look after both of us. And for me, that was a massive slap in the face, and that was a moment of real weakness, I guess, that she chose to really dig it in and, you know, push the point that, hey, don't forget that you have a disability and that this is going to be way harder. So for me, that was a really challenging time, and I look back at it now and laugh, but at the time it could have really broken me, and I see how it really shaped the first few months of motherhood for me and really made me think, wow, I need to prove you wrong and I'm going to prove you wrong. I'm happy now that I can make mistakes and it's okay to make mistakes.
Yeah. Now, to be honest, I could talk about this topic all day and all night, and I know that I've spoken to you about motherhood quite a bit, Elvira, but we are rapidly running out of time, so what I'd like to do is ask a two-pronged question of each of you. The first thing is, what do you think we can do to change the subtle discrimination that you've come up against? And the next thing is, what advice would you give to someone like me with a disability hoping to be a parent in the future? Jax, if you could start with you.
Yeah, sure. Look, I mean, I think the discrimination that we experience isn't always subtle. Sometimes it's really in your face, as I think we've both kind of outlined. And sometimes it does come in more subtle forms, but I think it's definitely, you know, pretty out there. I think one of the key things we need to do is to have more conversations like this, really, that show that, you know, parents with disabilities exist, that we're doing an excellent job, that we, you know, that we love our kids, that it's a valuable thing to really want, that we should be able to have it in our goals, in our NDIS plans, as something we aspire to, if that's what we want to do with our lives, and we should be supported to do that. No one parents in isolation. Whether you have a disability or not, you've got people, you've got friends, you've got family around you to some extent. And it's a myth, this idea that every woman just knows how to be a mum. You learn it. So I think I would say to a young person out there who really wants to have kids one day, you know, do it. You'll come up against a lot of discrimination and a lot of people saying you can't, but you have a right to want to experience that. And as hard as it is, and as sleep depriving as it is, it's the most joyful, wonderful thing as well. So, yeah.
That's fantastic.
I couldn't agree more, Jack. I think society has a long way to go, but as long as we're talking about it in a positive light and showing that, you know, we have our good days and we have our bad days, but it's a learning experience. Nobody's born into motherhood and nobody knows what to do. There are books on it, but I don't know how much they help when your child's on the floor in the middle of Kmart because they want a Kinder Surprise. So, you know, at the end of the day, I think the medical profession, I think they really have a much longer way to go, because from my experiences, even though they were really great in giving me support medically, they really didn't do much in the way of my emotional support, my mental health and well-being during the experience. And I think they robbed me of a lot of joyful, beautiful moments that I could have had. But in saying that, I think be strong, never give up, never allow anybody to tell you that you can't be a parent. Research. Just really believe in yourself that you can do it, but also put in the work. Don't just throw it out there and think that you can have a baby, because it's not easy, but it's not easy for anybody. In saying that, I think it would be great if there were more avenues of support during that process, dealing with the medical staff, dealing with midwives, and I think now dealing with kinders and play groups and things, there's definitely not enough awareness out there. So it'd be great to just have people talking about it and just live your life. I mean, us being out at the shops and talking to different people is showing people that, hey, I have a disability, but I can be a good mum too. So I think that's really important.
Yeah, and I think that all anyone ever wants from a family is a roof over your head and lots of love. So as long as you can give that, I'm not sure what ability or disability has to do with being a good parent anyway. So it was really good to hear from both of you. Thank you for joining me today. To everybody listening, you've been listening to Parenting with a Disability on 3CR special broadcast for International Day of People with a Disability. I'm Nicole Smith, and thanks for listening.